Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's a fairly average Sunday. You step into your backyard to begin work on a project you've been dreaming about for a long time. You've unloaded your supplies from the big box hardware store and are about to set out in earnest to do whatever it is that you want to do there. Shovel in hand, you start to dig. And you dig, and you dig, and you dig. And suddenly you strike something hard beneath dull, hollow sounds of wood giving way. There's a familiar sound. Coins. At your feet, in the bustling heart of Portland, Oregon, lays a fortune in Civil War era gold. That's absurd, right? There's a very real chance that one day this exact scenario will play out. That's assuming it hasn't already. You see, for years, a map to a great fortune buried in what was once some dense Pacific Northwestern forests has puzzled treasure hunters. Whatever it depicts, it is almost certainly buried beneath someone's lawn or the foundation of a home or business. It may be right in the middle of a busy suburban street. How can a treasure be so lost and yet surrounded by thousands of people? Today on the podcast, two real-life Portlanders are going to set out to see if they can identify the burial site of what is arguably the most urban lost treasure in America. So today we're looking at Sims Map. Dun, dun, dun.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Calderoni.
Yeah, and this week we've got a really groovy story for you. We're going to talk about, okay, I'll get back to my usual Robert Stack, deadly serious voice. Sorry about that.
Yeah, real serious. Serious treasure. I'm serious about treasure.
Yeah, no, it's a treasure story that was brought to us by none other than Vincent. This is Tabor's treasure called Sims Treasure. It's all kinds of different story, but this goes back a long ways, actually. My understanding is that you had a whole another episode already half written, but then for some reason you sort of decided to jump on this one instead. Yeah, I understand.
I do that a lot. I get distracted, and I basically had another episode all but ready to go, and then I looked at a news article, mm-hmm. and I just dropped it immediately. And part of it's because it intersects with my own life, and it's about my hometown.
Yeah.
So let's just check it out. We're going to talk a little bit about Portland geography because it's important to figuring out this treasure map. And if you would like to find this treasure, you're going to have to bear with us as we talk a little bit about it.
Yeah.
A little bit about Portland geography.
Yeah, a little bit. Sorry to bore you, but it's Portland is a city of 5 quadrants, which is kind of funny when you think about it.
Right.
There should only be 4. No, yeah. But there's actually 5 because we have North Portland as well as Northeast and Northwest, etc. And then They tried to add a 6. Are you talking about the South Waterfront?
They did it. The street signs down there now say South, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's nothing.
It's like, it is ridiculous. I mean, that's Southwest for Christ's sakes. I hate it when they do that kind of silly crap.
It's just a ploy to sell more expensive condos.
There's
5 quadrants. There will always be 5 quadrants. No one's going to tell me otherwise.
That's right. Because, you know, I mean, quad means 5, goddammit. And so, you know, stop trying to pull the wool over our eyes. I know that I was born in Portland. I know you spent much of your youth in what we call NOPO, the dirty North Portland area.
That's my part of town. I rarely traveled south of Burnside until I got a little older and had some friends down there, and it was mm-hmm. one of these friends who introduced me to Mount Tabor.
Yeah, Mount Tabor is it's actually kind of interesting in a way. You know, I hadn't thought about it till I was looking at your script, and I thought about it is a dormant volcano in Southeast Portland. It's not a huge, it's not a real mountain. It's more like a really big hill.
Yeah, a butte.
A mount. But it is it's very cool. The top of it, it's like the lower parts of it are residential. It's a very expensive houses there, but the top of it is this really huge, really cool park. And it just suddenly occurred to me reading your script, what the hell? Why isn't that entirely houses? In most cities, it would be. But instead in Portland, yeah, this is some priceless real estate, really, with the view and everything. You know, it's not priceless, but it would be highly desirable.
But think about it, Joe. With the exception of Mount Scott, all of the mountains, in at least on the east side in Portland, are not developed.
Yeah. I mean, well, Rocky Butte is somewhat developed, but I mean,
well, that's true. But the top of Rocky Butte
is at top, at the very, very top. Yeah. There's a nice park up there, but I assume Rocky Butte is not developed just because it's really some fairly precipitous real estate. It's kind of hard to build on.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Mount Tabor is mostly parkland. It's got, there's just big grassy areas and trails. There's a concert venue and playgrounds and at least one reservoir. How many reservoirs are up there?
Oh, there's a bunch. I know you got me on the spot. There are three, and I think there used to be as many as six.
And yeah, and of course the extinct volcano I mentioned a moment ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the reservoirs, so they're kind of cool. But Mount Tabor is named after another mountain in Israel, so it's very biblical. It's kind of like the east side of Portland. It's kind of like our Central Park, but more steep, more vertically oriented, right?
Right, right. It takes up, like less than a quarter of the land of Central Park, but it goes up instead of out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, every year they have this little soapbox derby race on it because it's the ideal place for it because it's so steep.
There's a road that goes up there that's shut down to vehicle traffic now. So you can get in your soapbox with your PBR and get hurt for money.
Yeah, there are some nice little crashes in that race. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've seen. I went 2 years in a row back years ago now, and yeah, I saw some guys really eat it. Like it looked bad.
Wear your helmet.
As a youth, I would go up there with my friends to do some very legal and appropriate things.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
It was all very wholesome. And on one such outing, I was introduced to the concept that somewhere in the park was buried Pioneer Gold. Mm. And actually, it was told to me that the man that the mountain was named after had placed it there, which is obviously untrue because it's named after a place in Israel. There was no like John Tabor or whatever.
Yeah.
The idea fascinated me. And I really thought about it a lot. Like the idea that you could have gold, like a pirate's gold somewhere in the middle of a big city.
Well, of course.
A small city, but a city.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's just, I figured it's just some neighborhood lore. Mm. As the years passed, I did hear about it again and again from more credible sources than my idiot friends. Yeah, basically, somewhere in Southeast Portland was a real life treasure, complete with a secret map and a treasure story. You know, just all the whole things that you want, right? Mm-hmm. Warnings of danger, familiar but difficult to place landmarks, indecipherable clue, and promises of riches.
Unfortunately, all treasure maps, it's a little vague in a lot of respects. So it's a little hard to pin down. It's a question of interpretation of this or that little drawing or clue or whatever. So we're gonna go back and forth in this episode about how to interpret this freaking map.
Yes, because
certain things on the map are really seriously open to interpretation. And before we started recording, Vincent and I argued back and forth about a couple of aspects of it, actually.
We did.
In a civil way. We didn't get angry. Yeah, but, we'll talk about that a little bit more. You, on the other hand, you were actually able to track down a nice low-res scan of the map.
Yeah, well, this is the highest res scan of it I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So there's a really great blog, Media Empire, Atlas Obscura.
Yeah.
Really enjoy their stuff.
Yeah.
And they published a brief article. It is very short by a great writer named April White. She wrote, she mostly writes fiction, but she wrote a nonfiction book called The Divorce Colony. And it's I would recommend it to basically everybody.
Yeah.
And
it's about divorce, I assume.
Well, it's about how divorce was legal in South Dakota when it was not legal in other places.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's great. I just highly recommend it. It's such an interesting look at American history from a lens that you wouldn't normally see it from.
Mm-hmm.
But that article, it is very brief. We can link to it. It's just a little blurb, but it did have some breadcrumbs in it, just little things. I like to think maybe Ms. White is writing a book about it. I'll be there day one to buy. But Among some other new little bits of information, to me anyway, Atlas Obscura got a fairly high resolution scan of this thing. Before, if you Googled it, if you could find it, you got some, you know, it looked like it was photographed with a noodle. It was not very easy to see. This is not huge. This image that I have it right here on my computer screen as we're recording, it is clear enough to really learn some new things about it. Also, I want to give a shout out to the Oregon History Twitter account and podcast. They did a big thread on it that contained images of it and information about it that was actually really vital to this episode. So they deserve a shout out too.
Yeah. I think the one thing that we probably should say though, that just so people from Northeast Portland don't get offended, it's conceivable that this treasure is actually buried in Northeast and not Southeast. It is possible. So just bear that in mind. Don't get mm-hmm. mad at us Northeasters.
I'm from there. I'm one of them too.
Yeah.
It's a great part of town up there. Nepo, Sipo, and Nopo are my home, but it doesn't mean that it has the treasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But anyway, so
most of the time a story is really only cool because you don't know everything about it. Each new bit of truth that you find about a story chips away at the fantastic and grounds it in our world. Normal stuff, but not the map. Now that I can really read it, now that I know what it was printed on, for example, the mystery is only getting more intriguing and it grows deeper and deeper. I always love a story like that where you fall down the rabbit hole and instead of walking away being like, I don't know, who cares? You come away being like, dang, that's more interesting than I even thought it was.
Yeah, so let's talk about this a little bit here.
I will put aside my glee about the silly treasure map and we can get to the business of describing the map.
Yeah, well, I think what the little nugget that really got Vincent all afire here is he found out for the first time that this was not actually, this map was not actually written on paper, which is what, if you see an image of it, that's what you would naturally assume. But it turns out, apparently, it's actually printed on something called tracing cloth, which is like a very fine, delicate, transparent linen or cotton cloth that's used, like, say, by architects, designers for making tracings of drawings. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, I guess, but way back in the day, I mean, when I was a kid, my dad was a surveyor and a civil engineer. And for stuff like this, you would use Mylar. Lay a nice Mylar over a map. You can make a tracing really nice. Apparently they didn't have Mylar, so they had to use something like really, really fine, thin cloth to do this kind of thing way back in the day. And so they use it on it. So it's on cloth. And when you look at the picture, you can sort of see, that does look kind of like cloth. It's been folded in several places, as you can tell. Mm-hmm. It's a little yellowed around the edges, as you would expect. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was written on with ink, actually a couple of different colors of ink.
Yeah. A couple of different colors. And I actually think that I've kind of come around. I should have changed the script, but I actually think that the blue that we're going to describe actually might be a pencil, like a grease pencil.
It's hard to say. Maybe, because if it was black ink, typically, there is no such thing as black ink. You know that, right?
Yeah.
But there is not. Yeah. It's either really, really deep green, more often deep, deep brown.
Yeah.
Or in this case, it could have been conceivably a really deep, deep blue, I suppose. But yeah, there is no black ink out there.
Let's talk about should we talk about the text?
Yeah, let's talk about the text here.
Let's speed run this sec.
We're going to put up an image of this so our listeners can see it too, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just so we're all on the same page and no one has to pull over to the side of the road and Google this to understand what we're talking about, we are going to say what's said on it and do our best to describe it, but we're going to speed run it so it doesn't take up too much time.
Yeah.
So in blue pencil at the top of the page, it reads Portland or Sims. Money is buried 5 foot deep at the graves north from barn 10 foot east.
And then beneath that in a slight angle in blue ink, but in bigger letters, really, there's a sort of partially drawn box on the left and then that surrounds these big letters that say, keep this chart till get well.
So on the extreme right of the drawing is a very crude and difficult to interpret drawing within a sort of a wiggly semicircle. And there at the top of this area of the map, there are a series of 19 hash marks in the shape of a greater than symbol.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? You said at the extreme right, but I think you mean the extreme left, correct?
I mean the extreme left, yes.
Yeah, the west. So if this was a map and oriented typically, that would be to the west, the left
side.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And keep that in mind because it actually comes back later. You know, is this oriented like a normal map is one of the questions people have about this. Yeah. So within this semicircle is these hash marks, very mysterious. I really don't know what any of this means. So some of the hash marks make out like sort of a greater than symbol. And then beneath that is a circle. And then below that is more hash marks, 10 of them. They're all in a line. Below these hash marks is the word port, finished with a dash.
Or that around could be, the word. That could actually be a period. But it's probably a dash, but, you know, given
that... Yeah, there's different interpretations about whether these are dashes or periods. I actually even went through the dashes and what I thought were dashes and periods to see if it actually said something in Morse, and it doesn't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So around the word port, there are 5 squares, 2 rectangles, likely representing buildings. It's hard to say, but that's kind of what it looks like to me. Then there are 2 depictions of what you can probably safely say are buildings, so they possibly could have been silos. They look tall, you know, whatever was passing for a skyscraper in 1860s Portland. And next to that building, just to the right, is a church of some kind. And all this is drawn in that blue script, which I'm now leaning toward being like a form of pencil or crayon.
Could be. And it's even though this is open to interpretation, the squiggly sort of semicircular line that surrounds all this stuff. To me, my mind obviously goes to that's the west bank of the Willamette River or in downtown Portland. Although, you know, shouldn't assume that might be something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But isn't that kind of where your mind goes immediately? Or do you see something different there?
I'm not sure. I tend to work on the premise that the map is orthodoxically oriented. Mm-hmm. So that what I'm looking at here, and this is, it's just a thought, is actually a cove, which is now what we call McCall Beach, where the Hawthorne Bridge is located.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would line it up with Division Street that we'll talk about on the very south end. It's a very extreme representation of that cove, though. It doesn't quite fit. But I kind of am of the opinion that that actually represents the eastern banks.
Yeah, although let's throw another thing at it. The line might actually represent the line of the West Hills. Imagine that, you know, if I'm being sneaky in how I draw my map, I orient it the opposite of what everybody is going to automatically orient it towards, right?
In addition to the blue pencil markings, there's what appears to me to have been black ink that has faded to light brown. This happens with organic ink. So like, as Joe said, there's not really actually a true black pigment that you can buy out there. And when you make ink out of an organic compound, time and especially sunlight will cause it to fade. And that's what appears to have happened here. At the very bottom of the semicircle are some faded letters that I can't read. I can't really make sense of them. It looks like it says something like P840 or PB40, whatever it is, it's underlined. And a line widely thought to represent a road or a trail of some kind extends from the semicircle from between the buildings and heads out rightward toward the segments that most people would assume were the eastern section of the map. If it was orthodoxically aligned.
Yeah.
So beneath the area reading, keep this from the first time, in the faded black, are the words Feb 14 dash, and beneath that you can just barely make out 1862, and there are some cryptic markings below that. They resemble opposite facing parentheses in blue that are connected by a blue line, and between them sits a similar mark drawn in that same faded black color, and that's a horizontal line that bisects all, regardless of the color, all of the sort of parenthetical marks.
Yeah, I don't. I have no idea what the hell that means.
So, just to the right of that sit there. This sits the following words that are very famous. They're encircled in blue, and they say, "All have died."
I like that. It's very dramatic, very melodramatic.
Very dramatic. Yeah. All yeah. have died. Beneath that, in faded ink, is the word house, and it's partially circled. In the next one, let's return to that long curved line in blue that moves across the width of the cloth.
There's two trees. This is clear. This is clear back to the west near Port, which we assume is downtown Portland, but we don't know that for sure. There's a couple of trees that are drawn in that that faded ink that look, you know, kind of a light brown now. And they just seem to be growing right out of the road, which, you know, right where, you know, if this is right really where the river would be. So that's a little strange. Although, again,
that's one interpretation of it.
Yeah, that's and then let's see, going from there to the east, you know, and some have said these trees appear to be bare of leaves, which would indicate, like, you know, dead of winter, that kind of thing. And right. I'm not sure. Of course, you know, it also might not be trees at all. It might be like birds' feet. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to understand, it's a very childlike drawing. But yeah, if it was meant to represent February and these are deciduous trees, it would make sense that they'd be bare like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. So written in a manner to move with slope with this line from nearly the bottom. What happened?
So it goes up the cloth. It rises from the bottom of this piece of cloth up to the center and then really up into the top third.
Yeah, and then it sort of starts to level off again. And so right on top of this line is written Pike Road 2 miles. And then that's interrupted by a little tiny drawing of a house with a couple of gables and a couple of chimneys. Pike Road 2 miles, but I want to stress this. It says 2 is spelled T-O-O, not T-W-O.
Yeah, this person misspells stuff all the time. Like buried is spelled B-U-R-Y-E-E-D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess now is a good time to put out there, I think the person who wrote this may have been German. Mm-hmm. The formation of some of the letters looks like German handwriting.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. A lot of immigrants back in those days. So anyway, let's back to this for a second here. Pike Road, 2 miles house from Portland. And from is spelled really strangely, too. It's F-R-O period M-R-O-M. So from Portland. So anyway, I want to stress, so Pike Road, 2 miles, could also be written a different way, or interpreted a different way. I mean, most people interpret it as 2 miles, T-W-O.
So I fell down a weird rabbit hole where I was trying to figure this out, and I thought maybe actually what it's saying is 2 miles house.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's 2 miles?
That there's someone named Miles or a family named Miles, and that's a picture of their house. So you take Pike Road to Miles' house, and then, I don't know, from Rum.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That does make sense. And in other words, that doesn't give us any clues as far as distance at all. It might be
beneath the curved line referred to as a Pike Road. In the faded script is the word barn. So that's the faded brown script. It says barn. And directly beneath those letters is a drawing that could be a barn. It looks like some kind of building. From the drawing of the house extends a blue line in a sort of dog leg shape that encloses the word and the drawing of what we're calling a barn. Hard to say if we are to believe that the curved line onto which the letters regarding Pike Road are placed depicts some kind of road or path, then it stands to reason the dog leg also would depict the same, some kind of street or trail or something.
So probably a little side road that went through this farm and around the barn.
Hard to say.
So there's two blue lines, kind of a faded brown square around them to the right of those, which looks like an equal sign, except tilted up diagonally. Not sure what that means. Those might be graves. There is the word right to the right of that. It looks like grouse, although it's apparently it generally interpreted to mean graves.
Right. Well, the first thing you see on the upper left-hand corner is the word graves. And so most people think that it's the two graves, right? Mm-hmm. And that those are the graves, and it's labeled graves.
Yeah.
Worth noting, Grauis describes something being gray in German, and some of the handwriting looks German, so it may mean something else. But I'm pretty sure that those are the graves.
Yeah. So let's see what else we got here. Right beneath Graves, it says $3,000. Ho ho, $3,000. I like that.
Nice.
Let's remember $3,000 way back in the day is worth a little bit more today.
Well, and we'll talk about that later. If it's actual U.S. Mint coinage in full gold, it could be worth a lot of money. Kind of an insane amount of money.
And even more depending on the condition of the coins. But generally speaking, I think too that any little treasure, any treasure find, the coins are just automatically worth more than, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I looked up what gold, U.S. Mint gold from this time period would be. And it's actually so astronomical, it's hard for me to really even figure out. They had a chest with $3,000 in gold or silver coins, or even a combination of those, from the U.S. Mint from this time, and they were in any kind of good condition, you'd be well into the millions now.
Let's go find this. Damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So at the bottom, so in the same faded colors, there's more trees. This seems to be kind of a square, which may outline like a property boundary or something. And it says big stump or stomp. I can't really tell, but I'm guessing it's stump. It says orchard.
It's a different, ink. It looks kind of brownish gray, maybe pencil, possibly.
I'm pretty sure it's a lead pencil.
Yeah. But, so somebody from those two, from those, that weird, those two dash marks that I talked about that look like an equal sign that's been tilted. Somebody drew like a dotted line from there to the southeast that winds up at a little thing. It's hard to say what it is. It looks like a little treasure chest, like a box. It's perspective. Like imagine they drew it, somebody drew it with perspective, say for example. So it's a box, or maybe it's drawn from a side position and it's like a treasure chest with a little bowed top on top of it.
That's kind of, what it looks like to me, but it is a very crude drawing.
It is extremely, very small, very crude. And then a black dot on top of that, which, well, I don't know what the hell that means, but then below it, money. Money. Somebody wrote money in the same ink. Okay.
So that's kind of interesting because that's pretty unique on the cloth, or at least on this side of the cloth. No one has drawn in this. So let's look at the bottom of the cloth now. I promise we're just about to the end of this description.
We're almost done here. Yeah.
So beneath the kind of indecipherable letters, what I thought might be PB40 or something like that, there is a backward Z, which could just be written off as a doodle. But above it, in this sort of semicircle area that has what looks like a drawing of the city, the hash marks actually form a backwards Z or Z symbol as well.
They do. Although I got to tell you, the backwards Z looks like to me an upside down too.
Okay. So now I want to read the final inscription on this. It's the words are, I'm going to do my best with it. Two fine old Symes died in the army 1864. Keep chart. Off 1862. And then above 1862 is written Feb with lines all around it.
Yeah. And I want to say that I interpret off as being misspelled and they meant of. So keep chart of February 1862 is the way I
absolutely agree with you. And I'm going to go into that in just a second. But at the very bottom, it says chart X. And that describes everything written on one side of the cloth. But what about the other side?
Well, apparently, it turns out that there is an image of the reverse side and there is some stuff on there. I mean, you can see, like, if you look at the lower left, it looks like somebody has written in pencil or black ink in the lower left-hand corner. It's backwards letters. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm talking about down there?
Absolutely. I reversed it and zoomed in on it and could have played with the contrast to be able to see it.
Yeah, but it's definitely there. Yeah, but I know you spent some time looking for an image of the reverse side, but you were not successful, right?
Could not. However, all I've got to do if I want is make an appointment to have a librarian or whatever show me this thing. It's down at the Oregon Historical Society.
Oh, I may go down and do that. It's actually, I don't know if you've ever gone there. It's kind of fun to go down and look at this because they look you over, make sure you're not a ne'er-do-well, and then they hand you a set of these cute little dainty white cloth gloves that they make you put on before you handle anything.
Looking at the pictures that Oregon History posted to Twitter, it looks like they don't let you actually handle this. They'll bring it out and show it to you.
I can imagine.
What it looked like. But what this text says is, well, okay, so actually we should say there's some really hard to read writing on the other side. It's got two lines. One reads PGA 8, which maybe could reference a page number or something, and then 1862. I'll get to why I find that so tantalizing here in just a little bit. So while we're still talking about it, there's also an address written on it, and this one actually is pretty explicable. It says property of Irving Smith, 209 Terminal Sales Boulevard, Portland, Atwater 93+11. Don't know what Atwater 93+11 is.
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, that was not an early zip code. That's not the way they did zips back in the day. So.
Atwater 93+11 makes no sense to me. I also found out that there never was a Terminal Sales Boulevard, or at least if there is, it's buried in history. But there is a Terminal Sales Building.
Actually,
maybe that's what it says. Yeah. So I think I have it figured out. Everett Smith was a judge.
Yeah,
this map was found in his possession.
That was Irving's dad, correct?
That was Irving's dad. So Everett had the map when he died, then fell into the possession of Irving.
Yeah.
I think Irving had himself an office in the Terminal Sales Building in the 30s. Yeah. It's still there today downtown. So, you know, the 209 may not actually reference an address, but actually maybe like a suite number. Which actually is kind of helpful because the
little map of Port on the western side, that is a weird little map though, with all the little hash marks, the zero and stuff. I mean, I'm
pretty strange.
I'm not sure what it represents.
So we're jumping ahead a little bit, but what I think they did is I think that whoever made this document, right, this map, took the chart of February 1862, right, hopefully a better drawn map than this, and overlaid the piece of tracing cloth, and he probably would have had to get a light source. So he may not have been writing on a desk or a table, but pushed up against a window.
That totally makes sense. So let's see. So the mystery, there's a mystery about this map, the creation of it all. Nobody knows really who did it, when they did it. I mean, when you look at the dates, 1862, 1864, the presumption is back around Civil War times. But really, this map actually could have been drawn decades after that. You know,
it absolutely could have been.
Not too much further after that, I don't think. But, you know, it could have been done, you know, it could have been done, you know, 1880, 1890, or God knows when. Let's see what we got here. There are people who... This Symes person is that's mentioned at the bottom. Old Symes, who died. So apparently,
I've seen speculation on who he was, but I don't buy in.
Yeah, well, you found somebody too that was because it says here died in the army 1864, and you found somebody I think who was named Symes who died, but he was buried in Andersonville.
Yeah, I don't have any biographical information, but I do know that there was a Symes who died fighting in Georgia in 1864. It could be that guy.
Yeah, and he's buried, by the way, in the grave next to Arch Stanton.
Stanton.
But as far as Irving Smith, then, so in 1933, there was a Portland area judge named Everett Smith, again, father of Irving Smith. Mm-hmm. He died. And not a lot of information about the guy, but he was a judge for a long time, and so he did. I don't think he was involved in any really super spectacular rulings. Did you find anything out there that was
I only have so much time to do research for this, and I didn't want to devote too much of my energy to learning about the life of Everett Smith. It doesn't seem like he was some big wig. I did find an obit in the Oregonian. And it seems like he was a respected man, and he was, you know, part of sort of this push to turn Portland from this, you know, deeply corrupt Wild West boom town into a proper, deeply corrupt West Coast city.
Yeah. Portland really was kind of a zoo way back in the day. It was kind of a scary place, you know, even scarier than it is today.
So in 1940, his papers were given to the Oregon Historical Society. I don't know by who, but I presume it would be his son, because he seems to have been in possession of at least some of them, based on the markings on this cloth. But I don't know that for a fact.
But what's interesting about this is that his son, appears to have been aware of the existence of this map. Because it appears that he might have done some looking for it himself, and yet he gives it to the Oregon Historical Society, which is intriguing. I mean, you would think he would have kept it, you know?
Yeah. In 1940, he told the Oregon Historical Society that he didn't really know anything about it. But this kind of changed later on. See, in 1957, the great, and I really do mean great, Ruby L. Holt dug up this map from the Oregon Historical Society's archives and included it in her seminal work, Lost Mines and Treasures of the Pacific Northwest.
Remember that book. I read that book when I was a kid. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, talk about a work that holds up. It's nearly 70 years old, and it's still a go-to reference for people interested in the topic. She's just a really entertaining writer. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, all of her research still holds up. So Holt's book, when it was published, seemed to spark a bit of a race to uncover the location of this treasure.
Yeah. And so that was like, it was like sort of unknown. And then all of a sudden people get excited about it. And of course it's faded again. So that was probably where your friend found out about the Tabor's treasure story. So, you know, like your parents would have been young kids when this story was a huge deal. And then they passed it along to their kids who passed it along to you, most likely. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So no one really knows how Smith ended up with the map.
That's Judge Everett Smith you're talking about, right?
Judge Everett Smith. We have a pretty good idea how Irving Smith ended up with the map.
Well, it sounds like he got it from his dad.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
We don't really know how the judge ended up with the script. When Holt asked Smith's son, Irving, how his father got the document, he kind of demurred, saying he didn't really know anything about it. Mm-hmm. Smith the younger, though, had changed his tune by 1966 when the Oregonian interviewed him. And it turns out Irving had actually made a number of searches himself in the 1930s, but had allegedly not come up with anything.
It's not shady. I mean, I would keep the map to myself and you know, do my searching on the sly. I wouldn't be telling the world about it either. But in the 30s. So, you know, and maybe he'd been searching for it. Maybe his dad was searching for the treasure.
I think his dad probably made some attempt to find it.
Yeah. Well, why would you not? You know, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean. And so when Ruby L. Holt published her book, which by the way, I got to see if I can find a copy of that book again, you know?
We're going to go to a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to tell you how to find this stupid gold.
No, we're going to give you some red herrings while we go find it. But hey, anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, commercials. Be right back.
All right.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So now it's time to talk about where we think this dumb gold is. And spoiler alert, Vincent knows, or at least he thinks he knows.
Oh, I think I know.
You know? Okay. Yeah, I don't know. There's we'll put some different interpretations on the information in this map. We'll get into that in a bit. But so there apparently is a theory out there that it's in Beaverton, which is I don't know. That's I don't like this because first of all, there's nothing in Beaverton, but let's see. No, nothing really. I guess it's based on the notion that no one knows what Pike Road means. There's no street in Portland named Pike Road, but there is a Pike Road in McMinnville. There is actually out on the west side, there is a little Pike Street out, but it's not a road. It's just a little short street.
And if it's the one I looked up on Google Maps, it was definitely not there in 1862.
No, it's not. It's just, yeah. So I don't think that really fits the bill.
So fans of this theory think that Pike is a misspelling of Plank.
Yeah.
Road. Yeah. So Canyon Road, which is actually still there and it's now Highway 26. It goes from the western edge of downtown out through this area called the Sunset Pass. They built this big tunnel back in the 60s or whatever. But the old way you had to go, you had to kind of like do this little loop around Jefferson Street. Now, the reason it's called it was called the Plank Road. It wasn't ever called Plank Road. It's called Canyon Road. But being at the bottom of a canyon, it was like a little arroyo. There were streams and stuff down there. It was pretty muddy and boggy. And so the way that people were able to pass on their horses and their covered wagons or whatever is that they would lay out wood planks.
There.
And so it was a plank road.
Yeah.
So plank sounds ever so slightly like pike. And I think that is the only thing that makes people think it's in Beaverton.
I can see though, like what we talked about earlier, if you wanted to be sneaky and orient your map the opposite of the way everybody would think that you would.
Right. Then, I mean, that's the only way this makes any sense. Is if for some reason this map is like literally backwards, where right is west and left is east. That's the only way that this can make any sense at all.
Yeah. Well, there's another theory out there.
Guilds Lake.
Actually, I'm going to give you a little bit of Portland trivia. That's not pronounced Guilds. It's pronounced Giles.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's Giles Lake. Yeah.
That's amazing. I've only ever seen it written.
Don't ask me why, but it is.
Giles Lake. Well, named after a person, I guess.
Yeah, but it's spelled Guilds, like G-U-I-L-D, but apostrophe.
So this is another West Side theory, but I actually think it works better than the like Beaverton West Portland theory, because in this one, you would orient the map vertically.
Yeah, you would turn it 90 degrees counterclockwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually that road there kind of makes sense. There's no break for the river because there doesn't need to be one. And it does sort of curve around just the same way that the Willamette would. This is right now the Giles Lake area is an industrial area on the it's basically between Highway 30 and the river.
Mm-hmm.
And this totally makes sense. Although I don't know that there was ever any road that was called Pike Road. Roads and stuff like that, had nicknames and local names and all kinds of stuff back in the day.
Hard to say. And it's hard to say whether it's saying that the road was called Pike or whether there was something about it that reminded the author of something like Pike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Guilds Lake, it was actually there was an old guy, old pioneer who lived out there. And then in 1905, they did the Lewis and Clark exposition there, and it made this really cool sort of World's Fair type of environment there. Now it's all been filled in. There is no Guilds Lake anymore. I've stood where Giles Lake used to be, and it's just a bunch of, they're like propane storage tanks or something out there. I do have an issue with this theory, though, which is that if it was at Giles Lake or anywhere in that area, even near it, why does this not depict the Willamette River anywhere? They just left the Willamette off the map. It's the talk about an easy landmark to use to guide yourself.
Well, and the other thing about it too is so Pike Road, I'm kind of sort of assuming would be the same basic route as Highway 30 is today. Which means that there was some sort of a maybe a farm that had a barn between Highway 30 and the river. And I'm not aware of any sort of homesteading or farming that went on in that area. Back in the day.
Right. There weren't orchards out there that I'm aware of. I don't know. Yeah. And some of that's also just, we can't really know what was going on in this one part of Portland, 160 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, it just doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like the way a person would represent that part of town. You'd be sure to mark the really steep west hills on the one side and the river on the other. It's how you'd orient yourself. And granted, you might want to leave that off of there to make it harder to find. It just seems like it would be there. And then if it wasn't, then where are these orchards? Are they climbing up Forest Park? No, that's not where an orchard was. Are they in the river itself? Obviously not. So that's why I have some trouble with this, but it is a better theory than Beaverton.
Oh, hell yeah, it is. But I'm with you, though. But no, I think if we go by the map being the correct orientation, then there's theory three, which you have labeled the correct one.
This is the right answer.
So you're thinking it's up on Mount Tabor, very close to Mount Tabor. Yeah, which, okay. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking what? Division Street. So this Pike Road actually represents Division Street, but it's Division Street seen sort of in cross section instead of from God's eye above looking down. It's sort of seen, it sort of represents the elevation of the street,
right?
Which is true. It's level for a long ways, and then it starts rising, towards Mount Tabor. Yeah, That makes sense.
I kind of think that's what that's supposed to represent. Because none of the streets in Portland. Portland's really grid. It's a very grid-oriented city, especially for the West Coast. We don't have a lot of cul-de-sacs and dead ends and things like that. It's very much laid out on the grid.
So it is.
Division and really no other streets, like Powell, for example, is down there. They don't run in this shape, but I think it's actually depicting the climb that you would have to do. So it, I also wanted to point out that Division Street was around back then. I know that for a fact. It is one of the streets that you can say, yep, it was there. It basically ran the same course.
Yeah, it was a road, but it was a mud rut back, and I was there. Yeah. It was.
In 1862, however, there were no parks. There were no reservoirs.
No.
It was a lot of wilderness on the south flank of the, what is now the park of Mount Tabor on the mountain itself. There was a farm, and that farm had a barn.
Yeah.
When the city overtook the farm and demolished it, they left the barn up and used it for operations to maintain the park structure. I don't know when it was torn down, but I do know that it was still standing in the 1920s when Labor's Local 483, my union, was formed one rainy night after work when the vote was held. So so if that barn actually depicts that what's now the maintenance yard of Tabor, you're just right in the sweet spot. You're basically something like 3 miles out of what would have been. And so if you consider the eastern part of Portland, like where Dr. Stevens' boarding house was, it's still there between Hawthorne and Division. You're right about 2-point-something miles from sort of the edge of what people would consider Portland. I also happen to know that there were pioneer era graves unearthed at the base of Mount Tabor. Possibly.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those old like homesteads back in the day, the family members were buried right there, you know? Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure that there were graves near that barn probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're thinking, yeah, go out Division. Okay, I like that. But do we have any idea where the barn was? Find that? Yeah.
Absolutely. I know exactly where it is. It's at the Tabor Maintenance Yard on about 65th, I mean.
Okay.
It was somewhere in that. I don't know exactly where in that maintenance yard, but they built the maintenance yard around the barn.
Yeah. So essentially then we got to find out where the barn was, and then it's like north from the barn, 10 foot east. Okay, let's do it tonight.
Yeah.
After I guess that.
We could go out there. Well, honestly, one of the problems I have with my theory, so I'll deflate my own theory, is that if you're going north from the barn, well, and this is oriented east to west, well, the lines take you south.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? North from the barn would take you up into the park. Now, if you went up into the park, if you went from the barn, from wherever the barn was, somewhere on that property, and then just went 10 feet from there, I mean, you'd literally be tearing up the Mount Tabor Park maintenance yard to get to it. But map seems to be telling you to go south.
It kind of does. Yeah. But obviously the map was not, again, drawn by somebody who was had any particular artistic ability. That could possibly account for some of it. Although actually, too, if you look at it, you see that there are those two lines that we interpreted. They're to the right of the barn, the drawing of the barn, correct? And there's a little dashed line that goes down to the southeast that shows us a little treasure chest that's labeled money, right? Well, what if that dashed line doesn't represent a little path from the graves down to the treasure chest? What if it actually is just basically kind of like an arrow pointing to where the treasure chest is buried, which is those two dashed lines there meant representing
to the graves itself.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in other words, so that's a possibility. But I want to throw something else out at you. One of the things that bothers me about this map, I've already said it, is that there's some extraneous stuff on here that has no business being on a
so much
map.
Stuff. It's so busy. It's so full it of is. Nonsense.
It is. And I think that it's possible that some of this stuff maybe is a little deceptive. It's, you know, they're clues rather than just extraneous crap that people wrote on there. Like right in the center of it, it says all have died, meaning the guys who somehow brought together this little pot of gold and decided to head back east to participate in the Civil War and never return to reclaim their treasure. They all died.
That's what I think happened. I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah, that seems to be a common interpretation of it. But I think that makes no sense to put that on your treasure map. So what I think, or at least I think there's a possibility here, all have died is really actually a reference to a landmark, which would be a graveyard.
That's very
because
clever.
Think about it. I mean, you know, graveyard is a place where everybody has died. And so that is, so instead of like saying, if you're heading out from downtown and you head east from there, the first graveyard you're going to pass that was around way back in the day would be the Lone Fir Cemetery, which, yep. You know, you're familiar with, correct?
Oh, very familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. I used to live in Southeast and I jogged through there and walked through there many, many times. Really nice little cemetery. A lot of very, very old graves there. And so that's what I was thinking, is that perhaps our little line here, Pike Road or whatever the hell it is, represents, say, Belmont Street instead of Division,
okay,
which would take you kind of past the Lone Fir Cemetery. And then the little house there kind of reminds me of the McClay family mausoleum that is in Lone Fir Cemetery. Okay. Now, that wasn't built till 1877. But again, we don't know exactly when this map was drawn. The dates in there, you know, like referring to a chart from 1862, that doesn't mean, you know, this could have been drawn years after that chart was created. This reference to Symes, who died in the army in 1864, that doesn't mean he was necessarily one of the guys who buried the treasure and drew the map before he died. I mean, it could be that perhaps in, say, Lone Fir Cemetery, and again, there's other cemeteries around town as well, but let's take that one and run with it for a few minutes here. So in there, perhaps there is a grave belonging to somebody, Symes or somebody else, who died in 1864. And perhaps, you know, if you go there and look at that grave, there'll be a vital clue to finding the treasure.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think so. Yeah. I would say, so this is regardless of the location, this is what I think happened. I think somebody gave this to Smith, to Everett Smith, possibly like as payment or something. And he said, no, you don't need the overlay. You don't need the map that goes underneath it. I'll mark it out for you with this here blue pencil I'm holding. And that's why there's two very distinct scripts on it. Whether or not this guy was pulling Smith's leg or whether he was legit, but that's, to me, that explains all have died. He's saying, don't worry. If you find the money out there, no one's going to come and claim it. Say, no, that's my money you got there. They're all dead.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation.
That's another possibility too. Yeah. Why somebody, supposedly an intelligent man or judge, would take some bogus little treasure map from some dude and say, yeah, I'll take that from you. And you know, instead of thousands of dollars for my legal services. But, yeah.
I think it's interesting that he kept it, but I don't think we don't know what Smith thought of it. He might have just been like, this is funny. Stick this in my filing cabinet. You know what I mean? It's hard to say. He may not have thought nothing about it.
You know, it actually could be that this map was actually drawn by a very, very young Irving Smith when he was a little kid. And it was just fantasy. It was just a fantasy. And maybe that's why Daddy kept it. He kept his kid's childhood drawing. You know, I mean, that's possible.
I think that is remotely possible.
But, you know.
Yeah, I haven't heard that exact theory. Some people do think it's a hoax, that someone maybe played a joke on Everett. It could be a kid's drawing. I do believe that the experts at the Oregon Historical Society have placed this as being roughly from some time in the 1860s. I don't think it was something that, I mean, I don't, you know, it does look old, but I don't think it's necessarily something that, you know, Irving drew in the 1920s or whatever, but you never know.
It is, rather crudely drawn, and I got to say, it reminds me of kids' artwork. But you know, maybe not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I would love to see, you know, I suspect that this was made to be overlaid across the chart of 1862, whatever that was. Yeah. And that if you saw this imposed on the map, you'd be like, and, you know, held it up to a window and saw the light coming through it. I really like to believe, even if I'm just tricking myself, but I really would love to believe that if you did that, you would actually see a pretty clear path through there and that all of this stuff would make sense, or at least most of it.
Yeah. All we got to do is find that chart from 1862.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you think happened to it? Do you think that treasure is out there somewhere, Joe?
It's hard. Oh, it totally could be out there. I mean, there could be all kinds of little stashes of gold and other stuff buried all over the place. In this particular case, it probably was, you know, maybe buried somewhere out on the east side. And it could be that it's still there. It could be that somebody found it. Like, for example, let's say you find it on somebody else's property. You're not going to publicize the fact that you found buried treasure.
Typically
you'd think you would. You'd call the papers and say, look what I found, you know? I mean, but, you know, or maybe somebody didn't publicize it because they were afraid they'd have to pay taxes on it. Mm-hmm. Or they, you know, like I said, they found it on their neighbor's property.
Or workers found it. You know, if you're digging, you're digging a new sewer line or whatever, and you hit that, you can't make that public. It's less likely to become yours. So they smuggle it off the job site and never said boo about it to anybody.
Yeah. Or if you say digging the basement of a new house back in like the 1920s or something like that, and you find it, you know, that property is not yours, you know? Mm-hmm. Of course you got to keep quiet about it. It's also entirely possible that somebody, imagine like a little bit later in time, they're using heavy earth moving, you know, like equipment to dig out a foundation for a new building or a new house or something like that. And somebody just scoops it out of the ground, doesn't even notice it. It gets dumped into a dump truck and hauled off to a landfill somewhere else. I mean, something like that could have happened too.
Yeah. I think that's depressingly possible.
Yeah.
And the neighborhood around South Tabor has been through a lot of changes. I really like to think that if it was at the barn though, and it was actually north of the barn, that actually looks a lot like it did. So like if you go 10 feet north from the Tabor yard, it could still be out there. Then it's on city property.
Let's get a metal detector and go out and see what we can find.
Union brothers and sisters, sneak me in.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. For sure. You still got your union card and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I actually, just to kind of wrap this up, I actually think there's a decent chance it's actually still out there. And that if it is actually, if the guy was confused with north and south and the map actually depicts it, then it would be across the street from Division. And then it could really legitimately just be in someone's backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it probably is. But, well, I don't know. This makes me think that, whenever you buy a house, you should probably just borrow or buy a metal detector and go around and look to see if you got any buried treasure. I mean, you know, that barn, if we just go out and take sort of a blunt instrument approach to the whole thing and just go out and start just scanning the whole surrounding area with the metal detector, you know?
Found a lot of nails. Yeah. That'd be interesting to know. I just think this is just such a cool story that, it's gone on this long and it's still going, Matt. This has actually been a pretty popular post for Oregon history on Twitter. There's been some rumblings about it on Reddit. Obviously, it got the write-up in Atlas Obscura. You know, I just think it's cool that there's just sort of this through line, you know, with these guys who, you know, went out in the 1850s or whatever to strike it rich in the Oregon territories. It's got the Civil War. It goes, you know, to this judge who's kind of a founding father of the city of Portland. His son inherits it. He looks for the treasure. He doesn't find it. And there's a sort of a gold rush on the treasure in the 1960s, 50s and 60s. Then it never gets found. So it goes away. Now suddenly you've got, you know, kids on Mount Tabor smoking out, talking about buried treasure. And there it is the whole time. The map's sitting in the Oregon Historical Archives, and we just need the other piece to find it. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff, man. That gets me excited.
Well, it is very, very cool. And I don't know, but one other possibility to this is that this is a decoy map. it's a fake, but somebody really did bury treasure and everything, but then they created a decoy map. So if somebody comes along and kicks in their door and waterboards them to find the secret of where their treasure is buried, you know, and eventually, finally, you fess up that you know, there's a map, and they take the map and they leave, you know, and haha, the map takes them total wrong direction, you know, so maybe that's it. But yeah, I like the idea. Well, certainly there is some buried treasures. There's something valuable buried somewhere in Southeast Portland. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Sure. How's that for a nice, easy generalization? Yeah. But anyway, now it's cool. We'll see what happens. I mean, there's people out there, and again, it's getting attention again. So maybe mm-hmm. it's one of these days somebody will figure it out. And you know, I still like my idea though that it's probably related to maybe the Lone Fir Cemetery. I think I think that it's right smack in the center of it. All have died. Right smack in the center of that map. Well, not quite exactly smack perfectly in the center, but pretty close. Yep. And it makes no sense that it's there other than as a clue to something. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking Lone Fir Cemetery, and then old Symes, who died in 1864. We need to go there and look for somebody who died in 1864 whose name was Old Symes. You know, mm-hmm. but you know. Maybe there is somebody there. We'll have to dig up his grave and see what's going on.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe. Yeah. All right.
All right, man. Well, I think we should sign off on this one.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Why don't you guys send us an email or whatever and let us know where you think this treasure is or if it is and what you think of this map, because we're definitely going to put up photos of the map on our social media and also, you know, our website. So, you know, what is your interpretation of this weird little thing? And if you get the money, you don't have to give me any of it, but if I could see some of the coins or whatever they are, I'd be grateful. So
me too. And actually, if you have any class at all, you know, you should give us at least a cut for turning on this wonderful treasure thing. Absolutely. Yeah. I think so. But okay. Anyway, to find out how to send us an email, stay tuned to hear the lovely Tess tell you that and how to find us on social media, et cetera.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's wrap this one up, Joe.
All right. Till next week. Ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.